Support for 10,000 Things comes from Third Place Books. With 3 store locations in Seattle, Washington, Third Place Books offers a wide selection of books, gifts, and over 250 author readings a year, in-store or online at thirdplacebooks.com.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.
I was at my dentist's office a while back when my hygienist announced to me that all patients were getting assessed for sleep disorders caused by breathing issues. To conduct this assessment, she stuck a tongue depressor down the back of my throat and made me vocalize. After examining my uvula, she announced that my airway was congested. The dentist came in and confirmed obstruction. At the time, I'd been taking singing lessons and struggling with my breathing technique and projecting. I was not concerned about sleep issues, but I did muster the curiosity to ask my dentist whether she thought my anatomy could cause any issues with singing. Yes, she declared. Not enough space for air to travel across the hard palate through the opening. I left her office that day with clean teeth and a new neurosis. I was convinced I'd never be able to sing well, and this false belief touched a very young part of me, the part of me that is hardwired to believe that because I'm not built like everyone else or because I carry a different cultural DNA, that I can't ever be as successful or good. When we are sensitive or impressionable, we pick up cues from people around us, negative messages about the bodies that we are born into and the ways in which we may not be good enough. That can lead to a lack of confidence, an alteration in our fate because we don't know how to let ourselves be bigger than other people's beliefs. But sometimes we know in our bones that there's an inner truth that's far more coherent than what others have to say to us. To hell with their age or authority. Only we can truly know the limits of our own minds and abilities. Leanna Keith was a preteen, mixed-race Chinese-American girl growing up in Omaha, Nebraska. She always had to fight to make a space for her own distinct experience. She didn't fit in with other Asian American young people, nor did she fit in with white people. And so at a certain point, she knew that what really mattered was just staying true to herself. When she was just 12 years old, Leanna's band teacher told her that there was something wrong with her face. She had a teardrop lip, a physical trait that is more common amongst people of color. Because of the specific anatomy of her lip, she wouldn't be able to easily master playing the flute. So she was told that she should give up. Like a lot of Chinese people, Leanna's mother respected teachers. Instead of supporting her daughter and working through a challenge, she encouraged Leanna to fall into line, to accept that her teacher knew what she was talking about. Leanna knew that this self-limiting reality was not for her. She turned towards her own sense of wholeness and self-mastery and refused to listen to what both her teacher and parents had to say. Today, at the age of 31, she's one of Seattle's most sought-after performers and improvisers, with both a national and international reputation for pushing the boundaries of flute playing. This is 10,000 Things, a podcast about modern-day artifacts of Asian American life and the stories they reveal. I'm Xinyi Pai. Today, the teardrop lip.
Support for 10,000 Things comes from Third Place Books. With 3 store locations in Seattle, Washington, Third Place Books offers a wide selection of books, gifts, and over 250 author readings a year, in-store or online at thirdplacebooks.com.
At Soundside, we bring you news and conversation rooted in the Pacific Northwest. Hi, I'm Libby Denkman. I think of my job hosting Soundside as number one, asking tough questions of powerful people, the questions you, KUOW listeners, want answered. And two, bringing you a daily slice of the fascinating, confounding, and often goofy side of life in Washington State. Join me for Soundside at noon and 8 p.m. on KUOW or anytime on the Soundside podcast.
Leanna Keith is a professional musician and a flute teacher. When she was a kid growing up in Nebraska, her school offered her an opportunity to learn an instrument. Kids got to choose what they wanted to play. Sort of. So tell me about when you started in school on the flute. I think you said it was the sixth grade.
Yes.
How did that all go?
Badly. They had all these different instruments. You could try them all out. And I tried everything. But going in, I knew I wanted to play the flute. Like, it didn't matter if they put a trumpet mouthpiece in front of me. I didn't want to do it. I wanted to play the flute.
Leanna had grown up listening to music. Her mother signed her up for piano lessons when she was just three. Her parents played classical music on the stereo at night to help her fall asleep. When she said she wanted to play the flute, she knew exactly what she was saying.
Most of the time, the flute is a virtuosic solo instrument. It kind of flutters and soars over the orchestra, and it has a very special voice. And I think just a kid who liked to be kind of a show-off and liked that sort of fluttery nature, it was something that drew me to it.
Leanna ignored the other instruments and went straight towards the flute. She sat down and put the instrument up to her lip. When she tried to blow, no sound came out.
The band teacher looked at me and at my face and they said, well, you've got this thing called a teardrop lip. It turns out, they said, your face is wrong. Your lips are the wrong shape.
A teardrop lip is a specific lip shape. The top lip comes down to form a teardrop, which gets in the way of a wind instrument's mouthpiece. It's a lip shape that's more common to Asians. In fact, I have a teardrop lip. Leanna wasn't one to disagree with the words of a teacher to her face, but she had no idea what this person was talking about.
Like, I genuinely was like, what does that even mean? People's lips just come down a little bit in the middle, because I just assumed my face was normal, right? Like, she pointed out a thing that I thought was just the average lip.
She knew that she thought the whole thing was screwed up.
There was no reason to me why, like, a face shape or a lip shape would prevent you from being able to play an instrument. And so I was just hurt. I was just hurt by it.
Leanna went home with a clarinet. The teacher had suggested it as a replacement for the flute. Leanna doesn't remember talking to her parents about her teardrop lip. It wouldn't have made sense to volunteer an imperfection. Her mom had a habit of siding with authority figures. Any admission of weakness could just lead to more scrutiny, more insult, and more injury.
My teacher says there's something wrong with my face. There's no way I'm going to tell my mother.
Leanna's Chinese immigrant mother was your classic tiger mom. More discipline and accomplishment, less play and experimentation. A little disconnected from how hard it is to be a kid. Her white father tended to go along with her mom. And they both agreed that teacher knew best. If the teacher suggested the clarinet, they weren't going to argue.
My parents, they're... tendency is to try to make as little waves as possible. I think that's a really common thing, especially amongst Asian immigrants. My parents were very much like, well, you know, your teacher knows better. I'm sure they're just doing this to make sure that you have the most chances of success. You should just do the clarinet.
Leanna tried for a few weeks to play the clarinet like the teacher suggested, but she just wasn't really into it. Her dad was a fan of Jethro Tull and had a flute sitting around at home, so Leanna claimed it for herself.
And I brought it to school and I said, I'm playing this instead.
Leanna knew her own mind, and her views didn't align with that of her parents or her school teacher.
When you decided to switch to flute, like, how did it go? What happened? Yeah, how'd that all go down?
Still badly. I mean, I still couldn't make a sound on the thing for the first month.
The teacher would tell Leanna to blow straight down the middle of her lips, but the teardrop lip meant her own top lip was getting in the way of the stream of air.
It was just a real big struggle.
The teacher had limited time and energy to teach dozens of sixth graders how to play their first instrument, so she didn't fight Leanna about the flute, but she didn't really help her out either. Leanna was motivated by a deep desire to prove her teacher wrong.
Maybe because I had already done piano for so many years, I knew that I was good at music, that I was just like, all I have to do is figure out how to make this dang thing work, and then I'll be fine.
When the very first recital rolled around in December, Leanna wasn't ready. Instead of being asked to sit it out, Leanna was required to sit on the stage with her flute in her lap. She didn't play a single note during the whole concert, which was incredibly awkward, if not cruel.
I was so upset. It's that sort of like young Asian American experience, I think, it's pretty common where it's like, you know, you had to be straight A student, you had to be a top of the class. And I felt that way about everything. And so being spotlighted in that way, in a way where it's clear that you are the bottom rung within this group, was really difficult for me.
It sounds almost like a punishment.
Yeah.
You know, for the decision you made. Did you for any moment even regret switching to flute?
Absolutely. I was like, I should just quit. Like, I'm already playing the piano. Band is clearly not for me. I'm never going to be able to do this. And so my mom, being the way that she is, was like, if you try anything, you have to try it for a year.
Here's the thing about Asian American tiger moms. It's a horrible, cringy stereotype that's sadly recognizable to the public because of movies like Joy Luck Club and books like The Manifesto, The Ballad Hymn of the Tiger Mother, which masquerades as a bad parenting guide. That said, sometimes parts of an exaggerated caricature can have some truthiness to them. And the formidable figure of the overbearing tiger mom is a thing that many of us can relate to. Leanna's mom had a specific after-school routine.
I had to practice calligraphy and math after school every day that my mom would assign to me because she thought that the schools weren't doing enough. And then 30 minutes of piano with a timer on the clock, and then 30 minutes of flute with a timer on the clock every day.
The tiger mom's impulse to succeed are deeply rooted in the desire for upward mobility. The immigrant parent gave up a lot to leave everything behind. Moving here is seen as the ultimate sacrifice that can be made to give your kid a better fortune, a better chance at life, and not a moment of that life will be wasted.
My mom had a sort of feeling of it had to have been worth something. And so if she wasn't pushing me the hardest she possibly could, then what was it all for?
First-time music students often struggle as they build up basic skills and techniques before being able to settle into a consistent rhythm of learning. That initial hump can be hard to get past. A lot of kids quit before they really begin. It's not exactly fun. But Leanna wasn't allowed to quit, so she kept practicing, consistently. She learned to adjust her lip, and over time, she was able to bring forth a clear tone. Slowly, then quickly, Leanna's flute playing improved.
I could sustain notes for longer. My fingers were getting more fluidity. I could actually move between pitches that were really difficult.
And she found her groove.
By the end of sixth grade, I had a solo in front of the whole school on a solo piece, like not just a solo within the band. They actually had me play like a whole piece by myself.
So how did it feel to like be assigned your first solo?
I was delighted. I loved it. I loved it. I mean, I still remember I played a piece that was a simplified version of a Mozart tune. And it was really just the most exciting thing I could have done at the time.
She continued playing and practicing, even when she wanted to do other things like playing in the woods or nearby cornfields. It wasn't long before Leanna outgrew her band teacher. At one point, the pianist for the middle school choir noticed that Leanna had some special skills on the flute.
And she's like, are you taking private lessons? And I went, no, I never even thought of it. And she's like, you need to be taking private lessons.
This teacher taught Leanna as much as she could about classical music foundations.
Until she got to the point where she was like, you can't work with me anymore because you've surpassed me.
Leanna connected with a flute professor who taught at the University of Nebraska. Studying with a professional flutist was a whole new ballgame. Leanna would practice so as not to disappoint her. Together, they set goals, like competitions and conventions. Leanna practiced more and more in order to reach them. She had a mentor to impress, and she had more interesting challenges to work at. Leanna studied with her mentor for 9 years from middle school through her undergraduate years at the University of Nebraska. So it was not a huge shift when Leanna decided to take the leap to become a professional musician. But her mom still expressed her doubts.
When I decided to pursue music, my mom made me write a contract with her. And the contract said that if I was not the best, I would quit. because she was like, you can't do anything less than that. Otherwise, it's not worth it. I was like, I will be the best in my field. I signed a contract that said I will be the best in my field or I will quit.
A flutist might plan to transition from college to grad school to auditioning for orchestras. They land their first job and keep auditioning for better orchestras until they get to the big leagues, playing with bigger, world-class ensembles.
Is that the path you saw for yourself?
That is what I thought I was going to do. Yeah, for sure.
As Liana continued through her undergraduate studies, she got her first taste of music outside of the classical canon. She and some friends started an ensemble that played music by living composers. Music that felt alive and relevant. It was radical. And her teachers were thrilled that she was enthused about it. They even gave her extra credit for it. But it was far afield from the regular curriculum. Liana expected to go on to grad school. Most classically trained musicians get more than a bachelor's degree. Liana wanted to know what she was up against, how much farther she had to go with her playing. After all, she was contractually obliged to be the best. So she deferred going to grad school while she went out and auditioned for orchestral jobs.
In every audition pool, I would be one of at least 15 applicants, at least 6 of which would have their doctoral degrees in flute performance. And we were all vying for the same $15,000 job. And it became a little ridiculous because I would see the same people over and over again because these orchestras were not picking these people who were auditioning, and sometimes they weren't picking anyone. You know, it was a brutal environment to go through.
The competition was fierce, and they weren't looking for individuality.
It was this, like, play like a robot. One mistake, you're out. That's it. End your round. Everybody is so desperate for the same low-paying job because of the, like, idea that this is what a flute career is.
It was eye-opening. The time she spent auditioning left an impression. Liana didn't want to spend her years aspiring to be the best robot. And she was excited by playing contemporary music with her friends. Why couldn't she play modern composers professionally? Why should she only play music by the same dead white guys? When she finally did go to graduate school, Liana had a new approach. She paid attention to what interested her. She listened once again to herself.
I was like, this is the only thing I want to do. I only want to focus on contemporary music. I only want to play the music that is relevant to today and playing music by people that are alive. But my master's program did not agree with me. They told me repeatedly that I was not skilled enough to be going down that path.
She was tapping into something bigger than her own musical taste. She was coming up against the foundational core of music education, that Western classical music is the end-all, be-all.
There is this mindset of there are the masterworks, right? They are the people who knew how music should work. Why would you waste your time and your effort on things when you could be playing works by the masters? Even within contemporaries, like, you can't play the music that your friend wrote. You have to play the music that this guy at Stanford wrote, right? It becomes this game of who's worthy of having music be played, which is unbelievably frustrating to deal with. It is a direct result of white supremacy and colonialism.
Liana appreciated the intensive training and expertise she gained from her grad studies. She also found an incredible community of taiko drummers that supported her in her musical risk-taking and experimentation. Liana made it on her own terms. She blazed her own trail, decolonizing her Western classical training by studying the Chinese Dietz and the Japanese Shinobue. And throughout her graduate school experiences, she performed, both on and off campus. She toured with a guitarist and together they played contemporary music. She lived the life of a serious musician, and she didn't have to audition for the role. She was already doing it. Liana's accolades include serving as a teaching artist for the prestigious Seattle Symphony. On the other end of the creative spectrum, she has performed with shadow puppet artists. Liana released her first solo project, Tarot Album, in 2021. And she's an absolute wonder to behold live. When Liana takes the stage, it's as if she fills the room with the echoes of wind. The fragmented phrases she plays are not always melodic. She builds layers of abstract sound using a looping pedal. And she also intersperses her flute playing with Tibetan throat singing and wailing. To watch and hear Liana perform is to enter into an altered time-space continuum where every hair on her body stands at attention. Liana is her own self, wholly original, resisting and subverting expectation. Despite how distinctive Liana is in her music and as a performer, non-Asian audiences have been known to confuse her for other people.
I've had, on too many occasions, people kind of mix me up with other Asians. Especially other Asians who do similar things. Sometimes not at all. Sometimes completely different things. I got mixed up with a cellist once who was about half my height.
Wrong Asian.
Wrong Asian. So much wrong Asian. I actually started dyeing my hair blue because I realized that people would remember, oh, it's the flutist with the blue hair. And so I was like, well, I gotta keep doing that.
My dad used to like quote this thing to me that was something like the nail that sticks out is like hammered down, because to call attention to ourselves as Asian American women can, you know, be tricky.
Totally.
You know, when we're supposed to be certain kinds of women. Just wondering if you ever felt isolated by that, or you know, if it was lonely, or what that experience was of finding your power and just being who you are.
I think it's a weird thing growing up mixed race, because you know, you get a lot of this discussion of like, yeah, you don't stick out, you try to be in the background at all times, but you can't do that. Because if you're in a community of white people, they think of you as Asian and the only Asian in the room half the time. And if you're in a community of Asian people, they think of you as the only weird looking one in the room. It didn't matter where I was. I was always sticking out no matter what. I really got to a point where I was like, if everyone's going to stare at me anyway, let's give them something to stare at, right? No one has ever been like, you shouldn't go that far, besides my mom.
Liana teaches now at Cornish College and has offered private flute lessons to students of all ages for nearly a decade. When she started teaching, she looked into the teardrop lip. She wanted to understand it better so that she could empower her students so they wouldn't have to feel like there was something wrong with themselves. The only place she found information about the teardrop lip was in reference to plastic surgery. Plastic surgery clients wanted ways to make their features look more exotic. And she learned something that was fairly obvious.
Every lip is different. Every body is different. I don't know where this, like, you gotta go down the middle thing came from, but it had to have been recent, because truly the large majority of flutists throughout time did not do this, like, straight down the middle thing.
She also discovered something very important about bias.
In general, people of color tend to have more likely to have a teardrop lip than others. Also, if you look at our education system, sometimes we don't have a lot of representation within the young music education programs. You know, a lot of those people do not have a teardrop lip. And so it becomes harder to get that information across to large swaths of teachers. So in some ways, it is sort of a racist thing as well.
Now, when Liana encounters students with a teardrop lip, she knows it's not a big deal or a stumbling block.
I have to work with every single student on their own personal physical way of being. But when it comes to teardrop lips, the thing that I do is I make them pick one. You can either pick your right stream or you can pick your left stream, but you have to close the other one. And then we just move the whole of the flute to the side that's open. That's it. It's really not hard.
Our best teachers are the ones who change our lives by pointing us back towards ourselves. They liberate us from self-limiting beliefs and remind us of all that we're capable of being and doing. They have stood in our shoes and know the self-doubt that is necessary to navigate to get beyond our own minds. After seeing my dentist, I visited my voice teacher, Jessica. I presented her with the information that I'd learned about my own anatomy. Here's what she said to me. There's absolutely no evidence that a greater volume of air equates to better tone. But also, why are you listening to someone who cleans teeth offer their opinions on the voice as an instrument? Then we dished about the limitations of classical music training and the importance of decolonizing the disciplined ideal body, the one that we are all expected to perform from, and the reality of how we'd rather relate to ourselves. Next week's object is a mask. 10,000 Things is produced by KUOW in Seattle, a member of the NPR network. Our host, writer, and creator is me, Shin-Yi Pai. Whitney Henry Lester produced this episode. Jim Gates is our editor. The show art is designed by Eason Yang. Original music is by Tomo Nakayama. Our production team includes Michaela Giannotti Boyle, Hans Twite, Amelia Peacock, Brendan Sweeney, and Marshall Eisen. If you like this podcast, KUOW has a lot more great audio for you. Search KUOW in your podcast app and see what piques your interest. KUOW podcasts are made possible through community funding. You can support 10,000 Things and other KUOW podcasts by making a donation of any size at KUOW.org. There's a link in the show notes. And as always, thanks for listening.
At Soundside, we bring you news and conversation rooted in the Pacific Northwest. Hi, I'm Libby Denkman. I think of my job hosting Soundside as, number one, asking tough questions of powerful people, the questions you, KUOW listeners, want answered. And two, bringing you a daily slice of the fascinating, confounding, and often goofy side of life in Washington State. Join me for Soundside at noon and 8 p.m. on KUOW or anytime on the Soundside podcast.